This is the Ultima podcast. Inside stories from Ultima Festival of Contemporary Music. I'm Rob Young, and in this series, you can join me and meet the composers, performers, and ideas behind today's most innovative music. I've arrived at a rehearsal room in an anonymous red house in a very quiet suburb of Oslo. Just before I rang the doorbell, I could hear strange noises through the windows. Was there a fight going on inside? It was high-pitched wailing, bits of wood being bashed about, and the noise of metallic strings being scraped and tortured. I knew I had come to the right place. We're in a room full of drums, cymbals, and loads of other percussion items that's usually used for rehearsals by one of Norway's leading contemporary music groups called Cicada. And today I've stumbled in on three musicians practicing the piece that will be performed in just 10 days' time at the opening concert of Ultima Festival 2022.
My name is Seth Carrico, and I am a bass baritone. And I am here singing, screaming the role of Cassandra for the opening concert of the Ultima Festival.
And my name is Håkon Stene, and I'm a Norwegian percussionist, and I'm here to accompany the screaming baritone falsetto guy. And my little Cassandra story, we're playing this duo called Cassandra, or actually we made it a trio now, is that it was the piece that when performed here at the Ultima Festival of 1994, that was the one experience that triggered the then 16-year-old me to become a percussionist. So that's a little bit funny that I finally get to play it. And already from the first half hour of rehearsing, I can tell it's going to be a great experience.
Yeah.
Thomas. Yeah, my name is Thomas Nilsson, and I'm percussionist also, Håkon, and we played it Sauter on this fantastic, legendary piece, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Blood and revenge, war and peace, crime and punishment. Oresteia, by the Romanian-born Greek-French composer Yannis Xenakis, is a musical tragedy composed in the mid-60s, revised right up to the late 80s, but which still speaks to the troubled world of 2022. It's based on Aeschylus's Oresteia trilogy of Greek tragedies from around 458 BCE. It's about the return of Agamemnon from the Trojan War, his betrayal and murder by his wife Clytemnestra, and their son Orestes trying to get revenge by killing his own mother.
So what's really interesting is that it's a pretty expansive tragedy, or trilogy of tragedies that he's compressed into, what, just an hour and 15 minutes or something like that. And so you have all these different different forces represented on the stage. You have an enormous chorus, a really big children's chorus, and that's one of the demands that actually makes this piece really difficult to put on, is that you need a lot of children for it. A very interesting orchestral ensemble with lots of percussion. And I think it's really cool that he compressed the piece rather than trying to make a 6-hour epic thing, because you get to the heart of what matters about what this trilogy of tragedies is trying to tell us.
Xenakis scored this work for soloists, a mixed chorus, a children's chorus, and a chamber ensemble. The sound world here reflects the violence, betrayal, torment, and despair in its subject matter. This was Xenakis attempting to imagine the forgotten music of ancient times, savage percussion, a ritualistic chanting chorus, and hysterical vocal solos. It really is best to hear this one live, in performance, so that the music can just take you over, overwhelm you. Even in this room with just Seth, Håkon and Thomas playing, you can feel its physical effect with your whole body.
People just are blown away by just the sheer emotional output of it, because it's a 15-minute scream fest. And you get to the end and you can't help but be impressed by it. But furthermore, in the context of the whole piece, it's amazing. Like the way the piece ends with just this unbelievable cacophony and just this building just growing, just absolute noise, and then just boom. Every time, every audience I've ever done this in front of has just gone crazy, because it's a very emotional experience. A lot of the music is difficult to enjoy in the moment, but I think that's one of the benefits, that it's 1 hour and 15 minutes long as opposed to 6 hours. Like 6 hours of this would drive a person crazy, but 1 hour and 15 minutes of it, you get to the end and you feel like you've really gone through something very emotional.
I think from a sort of performance point of view, his music, I think regardless of instrument, is about the struggle of trying to sort of make the musical text happen. And I think it was a composer who didn't care about, I don't know if it's idiomaticity is the word, but like the idiomatics of an instrument, like whether it's suited or not, whether it's suited the hands of a pianist, whether it's suited the cello, or, you know. So I think it's a lot about, if you read interviews with him about what is his take on interpretation, he just wants a sort of savage, archaic expression. Mm. And he also mentions this sort of Olympic spirit of, you know, that maybe if this generation of performance doesn't make it, maybe the next generation will make it.
Yeah, right.
And at some point it's a walk in the park, like, and then, you know, and that's actually a bit the case also. Like, there's thousands of percussionists and musicians today performing Xenakis probably every day somewhere on, you know, on the planet.
Seth sings the role of Cassandra, who had the gift of foreseeing the future but was cursed to be disbelieved by everyone. In the Xenakis piece, her vocals describe Agamemnon being murdered by his wife when he returns to Crete after the destruction of Troy.
It deals with fate, because you have Cassandra who's been brought back by Agamemnon, right? And so she's at the door. She knows what's about to happen. She knows that when she walks through that door, she's going to be murdered. And so now she has this freak out moment before the door where she's like, what do I do? I know what's going to happen. I have the power to change it. I can walk away, but I also have to walk through the door because that's my fate. And so this is an important part of the piece, because then it's mirrored later where Athena comes in and essentially says, there's a new way. We don't have to be bound by fate so much anymore. So you have these two great figures, that one is like the old way of thinking that I cannot change my fate no matter how much I'm able to. And then another one says, we can set ourselves free and we can live as we want. You know, I think it's this dilemma of personal determination that was important to him. And I think that's why he focused so much on her, because the struggle is real. And in the way it's composed, with Cassandra having a dialogue with the Greek chorus on stage, you know, and they're basically asking her questions. Who are you? What are you talking about? What's going on? We don't really understand you here. You're different for us. And then she's just pouring out her heart in front of strangers. And, I don't know. I think that scene is particularly striking in the tragedy itself. And I think I understand why he was interested in it. It interests me very much.
I think he manages very well this balance between total chaos, well, organized chaos, which he, you know, could determine stochastically with his computers and whatnot. And then this, all of a sudden, this click that anything is in unison and we're on a strict time grid, which refers back to his experience as a, you know, revolutionary, with we have a march and everyone was shouting slogans, and then there was shooting and chaos and everybody, you know, thousands of people just flying different directions. And so he sort of recreates that musically. So in a sense, it's kind of academic, but I don't see any, in the sound isn't academic. So.
No, yeah. And if you're doing it right, it, as you said, it sounds improvised in a way, but it is very specific. I mean, it's kind of like Stephen Sondheim, where like, every single word is important, but it's impossible to get every single word.
I I mean, techniques are pretty conventional. Membranes, drums, skin instruments, and wood. In this case, he asked for a set of wood block, but speaking about stretching interpretation, I decided to go for cimantras, which are like just all slabs of wood with different pitches, because I think the wood blocks sound a bit silly. You can quote me on that. But anyway, so I went to the hardware store or something and bought some slabs of oak. And I think that's also in the Oresteia ensemble. There are cimantras. I can't remember whether it's the children's choir or...
It's also in the Paris de Faso piece.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Which is all a weak instrument, isn't it?
Yeah.
We use for religious ceremonies.
And they look fantastic too.
Yeah.
You could cook some salmon, smoke some salmon after the concert.
We can do that.
Oresteia comes out of a vanished world 2,500 years ago. But in many ways, it still speaks to us today. It really marks the birth of civilization and democracy as we recognize it. A world ruled by law instead of brutality and revenge. One that looked to peace instead of perpetual war. And which tried to set up social institutions to move on from the anarchy of primitive mankind. You could say it's a transition from mystery to the age of history.
I think there's an animal instinct that we all have that you know, Athena in this piece, for example, talks about we can evolve past that. And I think that our societies at large have moved generally more and more in that direction throughout history. But there is a pull, of course, of the wilder side of us. And I think that because things have changed so much, there are a lot of people who are scared of change, and that wilder side is comforting somehow, you know? Anger, fear, these are all things that feel good in a very strange way. I feel like there's a pull that when people get scared or when people get angry, they revert to cynicism. And I think the cynicism comes from, well, if everything is chaos, if everything is crap, nothing matters, then I just have to take what I can. And I think that a lot of the problems that we're seeing now are based on these issues. Everybody's afraid and everybody's angry at somebody. And this piece is valuable in the sense that it can remind us where we've come from, what we've achieved together, and where we can go forward, because we don't have to succumb to the darker side because it's only a response to fear.
Xenakis died in 1997. And didn't comment very much about this particular work. But I wonder if, on some level, he identified as an artist with the figure of Cassandra, the person who, after all, has so much to tell their society, but feels that no one is hearing the message.
I think that's a very good point, yeah. And I think that's the big struggle in this scene between the two voices, is the fact that they're not listening to her. They don't understand her. If you think about it as her, as the artist, and him, the chorus, as society at large, it is hard. It is hard to see things that other people don't see and to try and express that and have it misunderstood. It's very important what we do as artists. I'm being sarcastic. No, of course it is. Course it is what we all do. I guess the joke I'm making is that it's not important what I do, it's important what we do.
Oresteia by Yanis Xenakis will be performed on the opening night of the Ultima Festival, on 15th of September at the City Hall in Oslo. The concert is free. Thanks to Seth, Håkon and Thomas for making time to speak to me. On the next Ultima podcast, we'll be looking at the theme of this year's Ultima Festival, Freedom is Around the Corner. Until then, thanks for listening. The Ultima podcast is made by Ultima Festival of Contemporary Music in Oslo, Norway. I'm Rob Young. Original music by Christina Sjergesen. The producer was Regina Dursen Christoffersen at Filt Oslo. Sound mixing by Daniel Dortland. Ultima Festival happens in September. For info, go to ultima.no.